from the order granting the petitioner by Judge Polk, order December 22, 2015. July 9, 2015, LT had a hearing before the Board of Mental Health after the state had filed a petition alleging that he was a dangerous sex offender under the Sex Offender Commitment Act. That Board of Mental Health heard the evidence and found that LT was a dangerous sex offender and that the least restrictive treatment alternative was inpatient treatment. The appellee filed a petition in there before Judge Polk. Judge Polk issued an order on December 22, 2015, found the petitioner should be granted. Petition before the Board of Mental Health should be dismissed, and further ordered the unconditional discharge of LT. What I'm asking this court today to do is reverse the district court's order and reinstate the Board of Mental Health order from July 9, 2015. During the Board of Mental Health hearing on July 9th, Dr. Levinson, state psychologist, testified that after review of LT's mental health files, criminal history, police reports, the pre-sentence investigations, and an interview he conducted with LT, that LT suffered from a diagnosis of paraphilia, not otherwise specified, with pedophilic and non-consensual features. Dr. Levinson testified that...
What is our standard of review of what the judge did?
It's de novo on the record, just like Judge Polk's review of the Board of Mental Health, de novo on the record. You can look at the Board of Mental Health ruling, give them deference because they heard the witnesses, they heard the live testimony. That's what I'm asking you to do today. Give deference to that Board of Mental Health ruling because they made the ultimate determination that LT was a dangerous person, that the least restrictive treatment alternative was an inpatient treatment. Dr. Levinson testified that LT's Axis 1 diagnosis met the definition of mental illness under Nebraska Revised Statute 71-907 because someone with paraphilia is substantially unable to control their sexual behavior to a point where it can be a danger to others.
Counsel, I'm going to interrupt and walk you back just a
sure.
little bit. In this case, LT filed a motion to dismiss the appeal,
correct.
And this court deferred ruling on that until the matter was submitted on the merits. I'd like to hear your position with respect to that motion.
Absolutely. Under 71-1214, the Sex Offender Commitment Act provides the route for appeal. Specifically, it states the appeal procedure to be used is what is used in criminal cases.
Is there just one procedure for appeal in criminal cases?
As a prosecutor, there's one appeal. I mean, there's four different avenues of appeal, and by avenues I mean things that I can appeal, such as a juvenile court proceeding, which obviously you just heard, a motion to suppress, lenient sentence, things of that nature. Or
do each of those have their own procedure to follow?
They do.
How are we to determine what the legislature meant by the phrase in accordance with the procedure in criminal cases?
That's a great question, and I think this is an error proceeding, and that's what I'm asking the court. Fine, is it's an error proceeding under 29-2315.
Is that inconsistent with the relief that you are requesting in this case?
I don't believe so. I know that in 29-2315 it does say that that if someone's placed in jeopardy, the judgment of the lower court shall not be reversed in any manner affected. But in this case, LT was never placed in jeopardy. It's a civil proceeding, which there was never a jury sworn in, he was never placed in jeopardy. So I think that the relief that I'm asking is still available to this court.
If the exception proceeding statute does not apply and only the general appeal statute applies, 25-1912, which applies to both civil and criminal proceedings. Did you ever file a notice of appeal?
I filed, as required by 29-2315, I did not file a notice of appeal with the clerk of the district court. And the reason why is because 71-1214 puts me to what I use in criminal cases, which was would be what I filed on was the error proceeding under 29-2315.
But if we disagree,
correct,
that the 29-2315 and its subsections applies, if it's simply the general statute that applies.
Right.
You concede you didn't file a notice of appeal.
I would agree with you.
And consequently, it would necessarily follow that we lack jurisdiction.
Correct.
Isn't the general appeal statute the more sensible one to apply in these, what are civil proceedings? Because the mental health statute expressly confers upon both the subject and the county attorney the right to appeal.
Correct. But the appeal procedure used was what's used in criminal cases. And since I believe this is an error proceeding, that's why I use the 29-22.
How does the subject use 29-2315 to take an appeal?
I think you would file the case as I would have. Filed application with the district court. The district court would then sign off on that and file his application with the Supreme Court.
You think that's the sensible reading of what the legislature had in mind?
I don't know if it's a sensible reading, but what I have to do is my duty to appeal this case, and my reading of it was that I used it under the appeal, the error.
And I will grant you that this is a very unclear statute, and I'm not suggesting you didn't do the very best you possibly could with this. But there seems to me there's another possible way of us trying to make sense out of this. And the sense, it seems to me, is to say exception proceedings don't apply in civil commitments. All that applies is the general appeal statute.
And I appreciate that. When I filed my appeal, there's not a lot of direction on where to file and how to file. That's why I took the error proceeding.
In your error proceeding, what relief would you be entitled to if, in fact, you correctly filed the right case in the right manner?
What I'm asking the court to do is to reinstate the Board of Mental Health order, reverse the decision of the district court, and reinstate the Board of Mental Health order.
You think that's encompassed by the error proceeding statute as a form of relief?
I do, as long as the court finds that LC was not placed in jeopardy, and I don't believe in this case he was placed in jeopardy. Any other questions about jurisdiction before I move on? Dr. Levinson testified through all the preceding Board of Mental Health. He used 5 diagnostic tools, Static 99, Stable 2007, combination tests of the two of them, of the Static 99 and the Stable, the hair psychopathy checklist, sex offender risk appraisal guide. Based on that, Dr. Levinson testified that LT has the propensity to engage in repeat acts of sexual violence, which would result in serious harm to others based on his diagnosis. These repeat acts of sexual violence are such that LT poses a menace to the health and the safety of the public. Dr. Levinson based that on all the diagnostic tools, all the reports that he read, all the mental health records, along with the interview of LT. Based on all of that, Dr. Levinson stated that the least restrictive treatment alternative for LT was inpatient treatment. Dr. Levinson testified that LT would have serious difficulty in controlling or resisting his desire to commit future sex offenses because there was nothing in place that would prevent any kind of repeat behaviors, that LT had no prior completion of sex offender treatment while incarcerated, and based on his repeated behaviors of sexual offenses with non-consensual victims. At this time, if there's no further questions, I'll reserve my last minute.
There was contrary expert testimony, was there not?
I don't believe there was contrary expert testimony. Dr. DeLay testified, but Dr. DeLay never testified as to the least restrictive alternative. He never testified as to a diagnosis. What Dr. DeLay testified to was that if the Board of Mental Health made an ultimate determination that outpatient treatment was the least restrictive alternative, that Dr. DeLay would take LT on as a client. In fact, on cross-examination, Dr. DeLay stated that he agreed with the testing models used by Dr. Levinson along with the results of Dr. Levinson and found LT to be high risk, future risk to reoffend. There was no testimony by Dr. DeLay that outpatient treatment was the least restrictive alternative. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. Locke, good morning to you.
Good morning. May it please the court, my name is Ryan Locke. I'm an assistant Douglas County public defender, and I represent LT in this matter, the appellee. As was brought up regarding jurisdiction, in order to have jurisdiction, an appeal would need to have been perfected. If there is no perfection, then this court does not have jurisdiction of the appeal. Mr. Wells correctly stated that Nebraska Revised Statute 71-1214 is the Sex Offender Commitment Act statute that gives the explicit right to subjects of the Sex Offender Commitment Act to appeal proceedings of the Board of Mental Health.
It also confers the same right on the county attorney, correct?
Yeah, that's correct.
So why wouldn't the path to appeal be a mirror image of, for both the subject and the county attorney?
I would agree, Your Honor. If the subject chooses to appeal, they file notice within 30 days in the district court of the district court where the proceedings were held. So in this case, it would be Douglas County, which is exactly what I did at the district court appellate level, filed within those 30 days. While it does say, there is that vague statement at the end of 71-1214 that states that these appeals need to be brought forth in the same procedure as in criminal cases.
So that's the tension in the statute.
That's the tension in the statute.
Both parties can appeal, but with respect to the state or county, it's subject to the procedure in criminal cases.
That's correct. Now, there's no definition of what procedure in criminal cases is, or what that is meant by the statute. However, as the county attorney in this case has argued, that Mr. LT was put into jeopardy, and that this is generally civil proceeding. It's my fear that what we're seeing is it's civil when it's favorable to us, it's criminal when it's favorable to us. The fact of the matter is that the Board of Mental Health commitments, both under the Sex Offender Commitment Act and the General Mental Health Commitment Act, are civil proceedings. That's been restated by, I believe it was J.R. in the interest of J.R. versus the Board of Mental Health, as well as Supreme Court's case, let's say it was Hendricks versus Kansas as well.
So is it your position that the state should or should not have relied upon this error proceeding statute in the criminal statutes, 29-2315 or whatever? Should or should not?
Thank you. I don't believe they should have, as this is the statute that you're referencing, 29-2315.01, is a statute which gives the county attorney explicit ability to appeal. It's been held by this court that absent statutory authorization, the county attorney does not have a right to appeal.
Isn't that also a matter of statute in the criminal statutes?
I'm sorry, I don't understand the
question. Don't the criminal appeal statutes expressly confer upon a defendant the right to appeal and expressly or implicitly not confer a right of appeal in the general criminal statutes on the county, on the state?
What I believe is that, yes, absent that statutory authorization, the county attorney cannot appeal. And
it's not just my question, the thrust of my question is, that's not just a matter of case law. That's also statutory in and of itself, isn't it?
Correct, yes.
Okay.
What 29-2315.01 seeks to do is allow the courts to act as a gatekeeper to frivolous appeals or appeals that are barred by double jeopardy, which does not apply in this case, as Mr. Wells had pointed out and has been held by in the interest of JR as well. Because of that, reliance on that statute is misplaced. Now, should this court find that vague statement at the end of 71-1214 does require the county attorney to actually seek leave, still, this court does not have jurisdiction because the county attorney still did not conform to the statutory requirements for his appeal. Essentially has two parts. First, it states what the appropriate actions for an appeal by the county attorney to the Court of Appeals would be, from the District Court to the Court of Appeals or to the Supreme Court. Secondly, it states, within 30 days, I have the statute here. Sorry, I thought I had the statute.
It says within 30 days of such granting order a bill of exceptions in accordance with section 29-2020, if such bill of exceptions is desired, and otherwise proceed to obtain a review of the cases provided in section 25-1912. What does that mean?
Well, Your Honor, that was decided in the case of State v. Kissel. In State v. Kissel, was a case where it was a misdemeanor case that was appealed, that was where the defendant was found to be guilty of the crime charge. The defendant then appealed to the district court in petition and error, similar to the procedure here, and the district court found that there was insufficient evidence. The prosecutor then sought appeal to the Court of Appeals. They relied on 29-2315.01. What never happened was that notice was never filed within the district court where the order was entered where they're seeking review from. In that case, the court stated that while it does seem that these two statutes, 29-2315.01 and 25-1912, have created different avenues, the fact of the matter is that you have to read those two statutes in pari materiae, which means that use both of those statutes together. In that case, it was decided by the Court of Appeals that the prosecutor properly followed 29-2315.01, as this was a criminal case that they were required to follow that in. But once application for the appeal was granted by the appellate court, that then the prosecutor needed to comply with 25-19-12 and file the notice of appeal within 30 days.
What function would that serve?
I'm sorry, Your Honor, I didn't hear.
What function would the notice of appeal serve by filing it in the district court? Is that a notice to the district court to cease and desist any other orders with regard to the case, or what?
Well, I think its main purpose, Your Honor, is to confer jurisdiction on the appellate court.
It's just a requirement to perfect jurisdiction.
It is a requirement to perfect jurisdiction as well as to give notice to the parties that an appeal has been filed. As you can see from my affidavit on the motion to dismiss, the first motion to dismiss I filed in this case, it wasn't until I received an order from the district court.
So it does have a function to the parties by filing a notice of appeal. It does give notice to the other parties that you are taking an appeal or the other side is taking an appeal to the Court of Appeals.
Correct. Okay. It seems I am running out of time, and I do want to make sure that I answer any questions. I did briefly want to touch on the merits of the case as well, should this court find that it does have jurisdiction. One thing I wanted to touch on was I believe that the county attorney had stated the wrong standard of review. The standard of review from the Board of Mental Health to the district court is de novo review. However, the standard of review from the district court to the Court of Appeals or to the Supreme Court is a bit different in that this court will not overturn an order of the district court unless, as a matter of law, the district court's findings were not supported by clear and convincing evidence. It is a bit different than just essentially another de novo review. Essentially what this court is required to do is look to see a rational judge, a fact finder of fact in that position, could have found by clear and convincing evidence that the findings that he made.
What is your source for that standard of review?
It is In Re Interest OS. Let me double check that it's... All these initials get a bit confusing. I believe it's In Re Interest OS. And I've cited it in my brief under the scope or standard of review. It seems I have run out of time. I would, we do pray that this court affirm the order of the district court. And if there are any other questions, if you have any answers.
So your standard of review is a stricter standard, which would be held against you, that we can't affirm unless there is clear and convincing evidence?
I don't believe so, Your Honor. The way I read it is essentially the same as standard review, almost in like a sufficiency of the evidence.
You're saying that argument. Clear and convincing evidence that the court, district court was wrong, or clear and convincing evidence that the district court was right?
I'll refer to the case. It's In Re Interest of OS, as I stated, 277 Nebraska 577. In reviewing a district court's judgment under Nebraska's Sex Offender Commitment Act, appellate courts will affirm the district court's judgment unless, as a matter of law, the judgment is unsupported by evidence which is clear and convincing. I believe that puts the burden on the
state. Wasn't OS a case that went the other direction in the district court? In other words, the district court found there was clear and convincing evidence.
I believe so, and this court would have overturned on the least restrictive alternative.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Do we have time for rebuttal? 15 seconds, Mr. Wells.
I don't have 15 seconds. I'll just take any questions. No, the court's already heard from me. What I'm asking the court today is to reverse the district court's order and reinstate the Board of Mental Health order from July 9th of 2015.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. The next case of the day.